This is the Humanist Report with Mike Figueredo.
This podcast is sponsored by viewers like you. On Patreon, through PayPal donations, with YouTube memberships, and Twitch subscriptions. To support the show, go to patreon.com/humanistreport. Or become a member by clicking the join button underneath any one of our videos on YouTube. Members get early access to most videos and get to participate in monthly Zoom hangouts with Mike. Here's the biggest stories we talked about this week on The Humanist Report. Enjoy the show.
It's hard to overstate just how many problems the Alabama Supreme Court has caused for Republicans with its IVF ruling in February, because Republicans are now in a no-win situation where basically everyone is mad at them, including their core constituents of forced birthers. Yeah. So if you'll recall, the National Republican Senatorial Committee almost immediately urged GOP candidates to come out in favor of IVF so that way they don't turn off any more moderates than they already have with their opposition to abortion. And soon after, Donald Trump, as well as a number of Republicans, also vocalized support for the procedure. Now, in the House, more than 100 Republicans already co-sponsored the Life at Conception Act, which would effectively ban IVF nationwide, which put people like Nancy Mace, who co-sponsored that legislation, in a really awkward position after she vowed to defend IVF in the aftermath of Alabama's ruling, because, well, the legislation that she supports would do the opposite. Now, she tried to pretend like the Life at Conception Act wouldn't do what it says it does, but nobody believed her because it's just demonstrably false. And it's why Republicans like Michelle Steele, who also vocalized support for IVF but supported the Life at Conception Act, withdrew her support for the bill because of what it does. So it's an absolute mess. But in the Senate, when Democrats actually gave Republicans the opportunity to prove that they support IVF, well, that legislation was blocked by the senator from Mississippi, who claimed she was worried the bill to protect IVF would lead to scientists creating human chimera hybrids. Yeah. So nationally, the Republican Party has not reassured voters that they're going to protect IVF like they're saying they will, which puts them at odds with even more moderates who are still pissed off about Roe v. Wade being overturned. But at the state level, Republicans in Alabama actually did a good thing, which is a sentence that I never thought I would hear myself say, but they did. They passed a bill that would protect the procedure and essentially shield doctors and hospitals from legal culpability. So this is important because it has allowed the procedure to resume in Alabama. And Republican Governor Kay Ivey signed it into law after it passed, saying this about the procedure.
We're getting a slight increase in the number of...
Sorry, that is not the video that I intended to show you. This is the Kay Ivey quote that we're looking for.
State lawmakers are approving a bill late Wednesday that gives civil and criminal immunity to IVF clinics and patients. Governor Kay Ivey quickly signing it into law, saying Alabama supports growing families through IVF.
Now, because Alabama's burp queen signed this bill into law, things are essentially back to the way they were before Alabama's ruling. People who are seeking IVF can now get it again. Hospitals have resumed offering this treatment. And other states like Mississippi, Kentucky, and Missouri have also introduced similar bills, and Mississippi's GOP has actually endorsed it. So we're actually seeing movement in red states to make sure that IVF isn't blocked, which is pretty encouraging. Like, I never thought that I would see Republicans try to do a good thing, but they're actually doing it. And they're not doing it because they're good people. They're doing it because their asses are on the line and they've pissed off too many people at this point. So Republicans at the state level, they've handled this issue a lot better than Republicans at the national level. But unfortunately for them, you know, no good deed goes unpunished because it's only further isolated them from their own base, because anti-abortion groups are now fucking pissed at Republicans like Kay Ivey because she decided to protect IVF. And even though Republicans at the federal level haven't taken meaningful action to protect IVF, the mere fact that they vocalize support for the procedure is unacceptable to forced birthers. Now, Politico reports, quote, the anti-abortion movement is turning on Republican lawmakers who support bills to protect vitro fertilization, accusing them of sanctioning murder. Oh, how the tables have turned. Several have attacked state and federal lawmakers who introduced legislation to protect IVF after the Alabama Supreme Court ruled last month that frozen embryos are children, for giving doctors a license to kill, and said legislators' efforts would result in thousands of dead human beings. God, God, they're unhinged. Other groups are going further, running ads against longstanding GOP allies that use the same graphic imagery, blood, babies, and scalpels they have long deployed to oppose Democrats and the abortion rights movement. Quote, for a lot of conservative Republican lawmakers, being against abortion has served as a kind of lazy way to say that you're a conservative, said Jameson Taylor, director of policy and legislative affairs for the Mississippi-based American Family Association Action. Frankly, a lot of Republican lawmakers are not in touch with conservative principles because they have not taken sufficient time to think through what those principles are. Now, I want to pause for a moment because what Taylor is saying here is incredibly consequential. He's saying it is no longer enough for Republicans to just be anti-abortion. In fact, supporting abortion bans, that's pretty easy. But the real litmus test now is going to be whether or not they are against IVF as well. Yes, I'll say it again. Forced birthers are saying being anti-IVF is part of our litmus test. Now, that right there, that position has created a conundrum for Republicans because their own base is saying you have to be against what the overwhelming majority of the country is in favor of. So they either have to support this small but vocal fringe within their own party or support the rest of the country. Now, we all know their opposition to abortion has already proven to be disastrous for them. But having said that, though, if they lose support from forced birthers, which is their own constituents, things could get even worse for them, politically speaking. Now, forced birthers are not going to go quietly into the night if Republicans don't represent them because they are very mobilized. For example, let's look at the response to Kay Ivey after she signed the IVF bill into law. Politico continues, in Alabama, the anti-abortion movement resoundingly condemned a bill shielding IVF providers from criminal and civil charges and pressured GOP Governor Kay Ivey to veto it. When she signed it anyway, one anti-abortion organization said the new law disrespects human life and strips human beings of their dignity, and another ran digital ads against Ivy and Republican lawmakers using graphic imagery and accusing them of betraying life. Jesus Christ. Quote, politicians cannot call themselves pro-life, affirm the truth that human life begins at the moment of fertilization, and then enact laws that allow the callous killing of these pre-born children simply because they were created through IVF, live action president Lila Rose said after Alabama Republicans approved the legislation. But Kay Ivey's not alone, because in Mississippi, the anti-abortion movement and its GOP allies have called a Republican-backed proposal to protect IVF the greatest assault on the cause of life that we've seen in Mississippi in a long time, and warned that the bad Democrat-based bill would lead to backdoor abortion and possibly cloning and selling of genetic materials of humans. Now, when it comes to Missouri, quote, I've had some negative comments from extreme pro-life type folks, said Missouri State Representative Bill Allen, a Republican who has introduced pro-IVF legislation. Quote, but I'm pro-life. This is bringing life into the world. I think there's something to be said about that. So Republicans are getting ripped to shreds for supporting IVF, and they're trying to reframe their support for IVF as a pro-life position. But forced birthers just aren't having it. They're saying, no, the fuck, it's not. This is a pro-death position, and you're murderers now, too. It's just hilarious. Now, the article goes on to explain that it hasn't gotten to the point where these groups are withdrawing support from Republicans altogether or trying to primary them if they support IVF, but they're trying to educate these politicians, i.e. lobby them to support their position. But I mean, if you're already running ads against these Republicans, things have gotten pretty bad. But I mean, if these GOP lawmakers remain defiant, who knows what's going to happen next? Maybe we do start seeing primary challenges for real pro-life Republicans against the ones that support IVF. Things could get really ugly. Either way, this issue has created the biggest headache imaginable for Republicans. And I think that now, they're not going to say this, but privately, they're probably thinking, holy shit, courting these forced birthers and evangelicals for decades was the biggest mistake we've ever made. Because believe it or not, this wasn't always the case. Like, forced birthers weren't always a constituency of the GOP. But you can thank Ronald Reagan for basically making this unholy alliance, for lack of a better word, with evangelicals and particularly the forced birthers. But now these Republicans are at odds with the rest of the country after Roe v. Wade was overturned, because they're forced to defend a position that they've supported for decades that is incredibly unpopular. See, it was inconsequential when abortion was legal and Republicans were against it because they didn't think they'd ever be in this position, but now they are. And the chickens have come home to roost. But to be fair to forced birthers, I do think that being anti-IVF is actually the morally consistent position, because if you genuinely believe that there's no difference at all between the death of an embryo and a fully developed human being, then it logically follows that manslaughter charges should come after, you know, one of these lives or preborn children, as they call it, are destroyed, regardless if it's through abortion or miscarriage or because of IVF. You know, if that doesn't result in a pregnancy, I guess that's manslaughter, right? Now, I don't agree with that position. That logic, I think, is insane to me, but it's at least morally consistent, which makes Republicans' opposition to abortion all the more untenable, because it doesn't make sense to think that terminating a pregnancy at week 9, for example, is murder, but yet disposing of frozen embryos isn't murder if you really do believe that life begins at conception and an embryo is a preborn child, right? So Republicans are stuck between a rock and a hard place, but this gives them the opportunity right now, I'd argue, to just abandon this entire toxic fucking movement altogether, assuming things do continue to escalate. Because if forced birthers end up withdrawing political support for Republicans and this part of their constituency is no longer appeased by them, I mean, you might as well drop opposition to abortion altogether, so that way you're not perpetually at odds with the rest of the fucking country. That just makes sense to me politically. But it's not just about politics. This is a moral issue, and the people opposed to abortion aren't as pro-life as they'd like you to believe. And I say this because abortion bans are causing so much pain for people right now. Take Arizona Senator Eva Birch, for example, who recently became pregnant but discovered her pregnancy was non-viable. And rather than suffering another miscarriage, she has decided to terminate her pregnancy, but because of Arizona's laws, doing so isn't that easy. So I'm going to leave you with her testimony, because I think it really underscores why safe and legal abortions are so important and why Americans are pissed off at Republicans for doing away with this.
I don't know how many of you have been unfortunate enough to experience a miscarriage before, but I am not interested in going through it unnecessarily. And right now, the safest and most appropriate treatment for me and the treatment that I choose is abortion. But the laws that this legislature has passed has interfered with my ability to do that, along with countless others. And I want to explain what I mean and why I'm still pregnant as I address all of you today, despite having known about the unavoidable demise of my pregnancy and despite having been to the abortion clinic on Friday, where they were equipped and prepared to perform my abortion. First, I was required to have another ultrasound at the abortion clinic, as all patients seeking abortion are required to do in Arizona. An ultrasound that I absolutely did not need to have. I didn't have an ultrasound because my doctor thought I needed one. I had one because legislation has forced me to do that. An invasive transvaginal ultrasound that I didn't want or need to have, performed by someone who didn't want to have to do it. I am safe and loved and protected in my marriage, but I cannot imagine how inappropriate that would be for a victim of sexual assault or for someone who has an abusive or coercive relationship with their partner, another unwanted vaginal penetration, but this time by the state, by the people who are commissioned to protect us. Then I got to sit through an exhaustive list of absolute disinformation that was read off to me. I was told that there were alternatives to abortion, parenting or adoption among them, as if delivering a healthy baby is an option for me. It is not. My medical provider was forced to tell me multiple things that don't apply to my situation, and some that are just transparently, factually false. And they do this because of laws passed by this legislature in opposition to medical expert testimony and advice. After the mandatory ultrasound and the mandatory disinformation, I'm then going to have to wait at least another 24 hours after my appointment before I can have a procedure. The last time that I had an abortion, I started to miscarry the night before it was scheduled to take place, and I was denied a procedure in the hospital because I was deemed not critical enough, in spite of the fact that my embryo had died and that my miscarriage had stalled, which left me with retained products of conception. The clauses for emergencies aren't good enough. These laws can serve to intimidate doctors, and it muddies the waters when they're trying to make complex decisions in situations that are really volatile. I had been bleeding and passing huge clots for hours, but I wasn't bleeding out, and I was still pregnant. So I was offered medication to make me start bleeding again and told that I could have a procedure when I had bled enough. The next day, I went to the abortion clinic where I was able to get the care that I needed. And 2 weeks later, clinics shut down in the wake of Roe, and I wouldn't have been able to get my procedure. I'm choosing abortion because I'm pregnant, and for reasons that I should not have to explain to you or to the church or to the state of Arizona, I need to not be pregnant anymore. That's the best outcome for me. Arizonans deserve the freedom and the liberty to make those decisions for themselves. I will never try to force someone to have an abortion. Nobody should ever try to prevent me from having mine.
So if you live in Texas and you're in the mood for a little bit of adult content right now, if you know what I mean, this is what happens when you try to go to one of the largest adult websites in the country. You're hit with this message that reads, "Dear user, as you may know, your elected officials in Texas are requiring us to verify your age before allowing you to access our website. Not only does this impinge on the rights of adults to access protected speech, it fails strict scrutiny by employing the least effective and yet also most restrictive means of accomplishing Texas's stated purpose of allegedly protecting minors. While safety and compliance are at the forefront of our mission, providing identification every time you want to visit an adult platform is not an effective solution for protecting users online, and in fact, will put minors and your privacy at risk." And guess what? They're absolutely correct. But Texas is not the first state to do this. In fact, they're the seventh state to implement age verification requirements for adult websites. And each time a state has done this, P-Hub has responded the same way by basically saying, "We're not going to offer content in these states." NBC News reports, Texas is the latest in a string of states, including Montana, North Carolina, Louisiana, Utah, Arkansas, Mississippi, and Virginia, where ILO, this is the parent company of P-Hub, has restricted access to its porn sites in response to age verification laws. They add, and it's not just Pornhub. The entire portfolio of adult content platforms owned by Pornhub's parent company, ILO, including browsers, YouPorn, and Men.com, have also removed access to their content in Texas. Now, before we talk about the efficacy of this law, I first want us to understand how it got to this point, to where ILO, P-Hub's parent company, decided to pull out of Texas altogether, pun not intended, by the way. So last year, Texas's age verification law took effect, and it was immediately challenged, expectedly so. And while it was being challenged, sites like P-Hub weren't requiring driver's licenses because there was that injunction in place until November of last year, which is when the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals decided to vacate the injunction. So ILO, at that point, still wasn't complying with this law, and as a result, Texas's Attorney General Ken Paxton decided to sue them, and he's now claiming that they owe Texas $10,000 for every single day they were in violation, and it's been 160 days, so that means that they're on the hook for $1.6 million, and Pornhub's response has been to just duck out entirely. So that's how we got to this point. But when it comes to the efficacy of these types of laws, I think that porn is one of those things that falls under the category of this is the responsibility of the parents, right? Parents who don't want their kids to consume that kind of content, they've got to police that content, police what their kids are doing, pay better attention, implement parental controls. But rather than leaving it up to parents to police the activity of their own kids, states like Texas have taken it upon themselves to assume the role of nanny in an all-out effort to stop minors from accessing porn. But the problem is that this isn't going to stop minors from accessing porn. Rather, it could push them towards more dangerous websites, more sketchy websites that don't actually follow the law and ask for age verification at all, which we'll get to in a moment. But it doesn't just fail to protect kids, it also punishes adults and unnecessarily puts their identities at risk. As Barry Collins of Forbes explains, these types of laws don't mandate how driver's licenses are supposed to be stored, and that information could instantly become a huge honeypot for cyber attackers who could use that type of a database to extort registered users. Want your employer, your family, your neighbors to know that you've signed up for this porn site? Pay us $200 or else. But that's just one hypothetical issue. Another problem with these types of laws is that they are very easy to get around. In fact, Variety reports that search inquiries for VPNs in Texas quadrupled after P-Hub shut off access on March 14th. In other words, you can't keep porn from horny people. If there's a will, there's a way. Now, VPNs are widely available, and a minor could just as easily mask their IP address to access P as an adult could. So the law just isn't effective. It's useless. And adults shouldn't be punished for consuming content that's perfectly legal. But by now, Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton should know how ineffective this law is, because ironically, in his victory speech on Twitter, he got a response that kind of demonstrates why this isn't going to be as effective as he thinks. So he wrote, Pornhub has now disabled its website in Texas. Sites like Pornhub are on the run because Texas has a law that aims to prevent them from showing harmful, obscene material to children. We recently secured a major victory against Pornhub and other sites that sought to block this law from taking effect. In Texas, companies cannot get away with showing porn to children. If they don't want to comply, good riddance. But he might have declared victory a little bit too early, because as Steve Monticelli points out, one of the replies to this tweet came from a notorious sex spam bot with a pussy in bio message. Now, for those who don't know, there is no age verification requirement in Texas for Twitter. So it might ask you your age, but you don't have to input your driver's license to access Twitter in Texas. And Twitter doesn't just link you to pornographic websites, mind you. There is actual porn posted directly to Twitter. And we know this because Texas lawmaker Ted Cruz accidentally liked porn while still logged into his public account back in 2017. I think it was incest porn, if I'm remembering correctly. But to make matters even funnier, other Texans who celebrated the end of P-Hub in their state also learned that the war had not yet been won, even though they declared victory in this battle short term. Because Steve Monticelli had even more examples in an article for the Daily Dot. He writes, Texas State Representative Nate Schatzline, who has said he believes all pornography should be banned, also celebrated Pornhub leaving Texas and received identically ironic responses. Boom! Proud to have fought all session to require online ID verification for pornography, Schatzline posted on X. Thank you, Ken Paxton, for defending our bill. We must end the sexualization of children. This is step one to taking down the predatory porn industry. Quote, pussy in bio, a bot wrote under Schatzline's post. Texan right-wing influencers such as Sarah Fields were put in a similar situation after reveling over the news that Pornhub is no longer accessible in Texas without a VPN. Texas didn't ban Pornhub, Fields wrote on X. We placed an age restriction on it. Pornhub wants your children so bad they got mad about it and left Texas. Link in bio, another porn spam bot responded. Observers were highly amused by the porn bot spam on such posts. Puppy in bio, one joked. Another pointed out that porn is readily available on X. Yeah, so I mean, this kind of feels like the porn equivalent of George W. Bush's mission accomplished speech with regard to the Iraq War, because they thought they won, but they were reminded very quickly that you kind of didn't, though. So what's the lesson here? The lesson is that this policy, created under the pretense of protecting children from porn, isn't actually going to protect children. It'll just needlessly punish adults and put their personal information at risk for doing something that they are legally entitled to do. But I think that's the point, right? I don't think that this is about kids at all. I think they just want to ban porn for everyone. And I say this because they're admitting it. They're saying this is one step closer to our goal of completely banning porn. And it's because this gets them closer to the Christian theocracy that they've been yearning for decades. So, I mean, of course, they just want to ban it for everyone. And it was never really about the kids. And whenever a politician says they want to protect kids, usually that's a sign that they don't want to protect kids. And they're using that as an excuse to cultivate sympathy for whatever they're trying to sell you, but it's usually bullshit. Now, rather than finding ways to improve your life meaningfully in Texas, politicians there are just like continuing to go on this moral crusade against porn, which, do you think if you're in Texas and you vote for Republicans, this is going to meaningfully improve your life at all? And we all know that these politicians who are against porn, they consume it themselves. Like, are we kidding ourselves? Of course they consume porn. I'm sure that Ken Paxton whacked one out to porn before he wrote that tweet. So they are unserious, and people need to know that. Well, it turns out Democratic Senator Sherrod Brown will be facing off against Bernie, but not that Bernie, Republican Bernie, specifically Bernie Moreno, the guy behind me. Now, based on polls, it seems like Brown has a pretty comfortable lead right now, but that's not to say that Moreno can't win, because he's been endorsed by Trump and he's trying to LARP as a populist in response to Brown's working class appeal. And LARPing as a populist has been effective in Ohio, given how they just elected J.D. Vance over Tim Ryan. Now, this is not necessarily the worst Republican ever, right? Not the scariest, not the most extreme, but he might be the phoniest, perhaps even more so than J.D. Vance, which is a pretty impressive feat, because we don't actually know who Bernie Moreno is. It seems like a character he constructed for purposes of this campaign. So let me tell you what I mean by that. So he was endorsed by Trump, and he, of course, brings up that endorsement whenever he can. It's on his campaign signage. He also calls himself a Trump-endorsed America First outsider. And if you go to his campaign website, you're not going to find any policies, but you will find a picture of him with Trump first, even before you get to the donation part. But what's funny is that he wasn't always the biggest Trump guy. In fact, he was attacking Trump not that long ago. As CNN reports, Bernie Moreno, a Republican businessman running for the U.S. Senate in Ohio, once said there was no scenario in which he would support Donald Trump. He called Trump a fake Republican who stokes hatred and fear and suggested that the former president's popularity is the result of ignorance in our society. Moreno now attacks the wine-sipping country club Republicans who are offended by President Trump's words. He characterized individuals in prison for Capitol riot-related offenses as political prisoners, claims the 2020 election was stolen, and alleges collaboration between big tech, the swamp, the corporate media, and Democrats to rig the election. Despite this, he previously congratulated President Joe Biden on his 2020 presidential win, and after the attack on the Capitol in January of 2021, Moreno posted, "Trump deserves lots and lots of blame for this," adding, "He didn't calm tensions. No one, and certainly not me, has excuses that behavior, or can excuse that behavior," I think he's trying to say. So he's been all over the place, and I feel like just pointing out that he was anti-Trump and then pro-Trump really doesn't do it justice. So let me break it down for you. In November of 2020, he was encouraging people to accept the results of the election, and he also denounced Trump for claiming that the election was fraudulent without proof, saying that it potentially do irreparable harm to the United States. And on January 6th, he said that the insurrectionists made an embarrassment of the country. And then, just over 1 year later, in December of 2021, he had completely changed his tune and released this ad.
President Trump says the election was stolen, and he's right.
Yeah. So needless to say, that is quite the turnaround, and it might even be a faster 180 than Tulsi Gabbard, which says something. Now, all of his tweets criticizing Trump have, of course, since been deleted, and a clip from the ad that we just saw was from his first Senate campaign in 2021, where he was actually competing in a GOP primary against J.D. Vance, who went on to win. But just 2 years later, he came back, and he actually won, and it just feels like Ohio's Republican Party really has an affinity for phonies. Like, what are you all doing there? But the 2020 election is not the only thing where he's had a change of heart. As LGBTQ Nation reports, prior to his first Senate run in 2021, Moreno, who has said his eldest son is gay, was a vocal supporter of LGBTQ plus rights. But during his current campaign, he has accused advocates of LGBTQ plus rights of pushing a radical agenda of indoctrination and described his primary opponents as supporting a radical trans agenda. He has been endorsed by the anti-LGBTQ plus group Ohio Values Voters. So this is obviously one of those politicians that just goes wherever way the wind blows, right? He wasn't vehemently anti-LGBTQ plus in 2021 because that was before Don't Say Gay and the GOP's hysteria over groomers and indoctrination. But now that the rest of the party has adopted those talking points, well, of course, he's got to parrot them too. Parrot everything he hears, even though he knows that that rhetoric is harmful because he has a gay son, or at least if he's not lying about that too. But regardless of how fake he is as a person or a politician, rather, he was smart to not say anything about LGBTQ plus rights in 2021, given the dark secret about him that was just discovered by AP. They report, after vaulting into the top tier of contenders with a coveted endorsement from Donald Trump, Moreno, who has shifted from a public supporter of LGBTQ rights to a hardline opponent, is confronting questions about the existence of a 2008 profile seeking men for one-on-one sex on a casual sexual encounters website called Adult Friend Finder. Quote, "Hi, looking for young guys to have fun with while traveling," reads a caption on a photoless profile under the username Nardo19672. According to an Associated Press review of records made public through a massive and well-publicized data breach of the website, records also show the profile was last accessed about 6 hours after it was created. The AP review confirmed that someone with access to Moreno's email account created the profile, though the AP could not definitively confirm whether it was created by Moreno himself. Damn. I bet that he wishes he didn't go full anti-LGBTQ plus bigot, because if he didn't, then I don't think anyone would have really suspected anything, right? Republicans have yet to learn that them being openly antagonistic towards queer people makes them very suspicious, right? Everybody knows that Lindsey Graham is a 6 on the Kinsey scale, for example. But since he's not openly hateful towards queer people, he's not drawing any unwanted attention. Right? He's not getting people to look into his search history or something, or try to figure out any details about what may or may not be lacking in the closet. We just know he's gay, but since he's not talking about it, nobody really perceives him as being a hypocrite. But if a Republican starts being really anti-gay, well, then odds are that individual has something to hide, and there's a possibility, a strong possibility, that that person could be a hypocrite. They never learn, though. But apparently, there is a perfectly valid reason as to why he was allegedly seeking out sex with another man in 2008. It was a prank, bro. I'm not joking. That is literally the excuse that they're running with. AP continues, on Thursday evening, 2 days after the AP first asked Moreno's campaign about the account, the candidate's lawyer said a former intern created the account as a prank. The lawyer provided a statement from the intern, Dan Reese, who said he created the account as part of a juvenile prank. Quote, I am thoroughly embarrassed by an aborted prank I pulled on my friend and former boss, Bernie Moreno, nearly 2 decades ago, Reese said. The AP couldn't independently confirm Reese's statement, and he didn't immediately respond to messages left for him on multiple phone numbers listed to him. He donated $6,599 to Moreno's campaign last year, according to campaign finance records. Moreno's lawyer, Charles Harder, that's a really unfortunate name given the circumstances, insisted Moreno had nothing to do with the AFF account. I'm sure. But the question is, what exactly is the prank? Hey bro, I just created a profile with your email to find a guy to have sex with. Gotcha. It's just a prank, bro. I mean, how exactly is that a prank? Am I missing something here? This excuse makes no sense. And it's so fucking stupid. He should have just said, if they were going to lie, he should have just said, this was a staffer that stole my email because he didn't want to come out. And so, like, he used my email to find men to hook up with. I don't know. I just feel like saying it's a prank is, like, the worst excuse you could possibly come up with. What I'm assuming happened is that Moreno actually did create the profile while horny because he was looking for sex with men, but he felt guilty about the prospect of cheating on his wife with a man, so he chose to just jerk off instead and ended up abandoning the profile altogether in his post-nut clarity. That's at least the best outcome for his wife, because he is married, and I would feel bad if he did cheat on her, but it's also possible that he did find someone to hook up with within 6 hours and then just never returned to adult friend finder after mission accomplished. I'm not sure, but here's the thing. He is now the GOP nominee, and this could hurt him since they've chosen to make queer people their enemy. In fact, a super PAC aligned with his primary opponent, Matt Dolan, actually turned this story into an ad.
A new AP report suggests that Bernie Moreno, a married man, trolled the internet seeking men for one-on-one sex, looking for young guys to have fun with while traveling. Creepy, huh?
So, I mean, that's been his life as of late. Even though he is the winner, he has to worry about this, and he's been in full-on damage control mode as a result since this scandal broke. But he decided to send out the big guns in order to set the record straight. So he sent out his wife/beard Bridget Moreno to release the following statement. Quote, my husband and I have known Matt Dolan and his family for years. For him to stoop this low simply because he's losing this race is disgusting, disgraceful, and he should be embarrassed. If he's willing to slander my husband simply to win a political election, he doesn't belong anywhere near elected office. I know family values might not mean much to Matt Dolan, but they mean a lot to his family. His desperate attempts will backfire, and I have full confidence that Ohioans will see through his dirty tricks and elect an actual conservative to the U.S. Senate. Now that this story has been proven to be 100% false, sure, Bridget, if Matt even has an ounce of integrity left in him, he will publicly disavow this slime coming from his this family-funded super PAC. So Bridget Moreno coming out guns blazing in defense of her man, saying, fuck you for saying that her husband is gay. We all know it was just a prank. That was 100% confirmed. This reminds me of that scene from The Righteous Gemstones, if you've seen it, where Jesse Gemstone, the son of a prosperity preacher, is in the car with his wife. And just as she's telling him how thankful she is that he's always so honest with her, he begins to pursue another vehicle because the person driving, he notices, is the same person who has a video of him doing drugs and fucking sex workers, and he's blackmailing him. So they get into this high-speed chase, and the car he's pursuing ends up flipping over, and then he pulls over, right, gets out of the car, grabs his gun, and then his wife says, baby, what on earth is going on? And he looks at her and says, nothing, baby, it's just some guys I do car pranks with. That right there is Bridget Moreno, because he's basically saying, listen, this gay stuff, it's not true. These guys I'm sucking off, it's just some guys I do sucking off pranks with. I'm like, hey, fellas, any of you want your dick sucked? Oh, just kidding. Unless. It's just, I cannot believe they're running with the prank excuse. I can't, Bernie, come on. It's the worst excuse ever. It's so unbelievable. Now, the good news for Bridget is that I don't actually think that Bernie is gay. That doesn't mean he's straight. I think he's probably bisexual. That's the vibes that I get from him. Having said that, though, has he ever acted on it? I don't know. Because taking the step to create an adult friend finder profile while married, you know, it is a little bit suspicious. So if I were her, I would be worried. But it is a sad story because this man has a family. He has a wife. And if he really did cheat on her, you know, it's just, it's sad, right? But at the same time, I can't not laugh at the story given the excuse that he used, because I'm sorry, that just makes this shit inherently hilarious. I can't, like you said, it's a prank. What the fuck? How do you say that with a straight face, right? And I love that Bridget is like, I don't even know what she looks like, but I just imagine her being this really sweet, innocent woman who believes everything her husband says. And she also thinks he's a true conservative as well, because that's what she said when just a couple of years ago he was denouncing election truthers, but now he's one of them. So, I mean, what do you say? You know, there's naivete and then there's just straight up stupidity, right? So this is who Republican Party primary voters chose to go with, an anti-gay closet case who's saying whatever he thinks he needs to say in order to obtain power. He might not necessarily be the most extreme or scary Republican running in this election cycle, but people that thirsty for power are honestly the last people that should have it. So I hope that people in Ohio don't fall for his bullshit in the same way that they fell for J.D. Vance's bullshit. You have a better option, go with that option.
Now, if I don't get elected, it's going to be a bloodbath for the whole. That's going to be the least of it. It's going to be a bloodbath for the country. That'll be the least of it.
Those comments that you just heard from Trump drew widespread condemnation, given how there was actually violence the last time he lost the election that he still won't admit he lost, mind you, hence why there was violence. But President Biden quickly pounced on that comment and released an ad juxtaposing his bloodbath comment with extremism that he enabled while he was president. Now, Trump is crying fake news and says that he was taken out of context. In a tweet on Truth Social, he writes, "The fake news media and their Democrat partners in the destruction of our nation pretended to be shocked at my use of the word bloodbath, even though they fully understand that I was simply referring to imports allowed by crooked Joe Biden, which are killing the automobile industry. The United Auto Workers, but not their leadership, fully understand what I mean. With the electric car mandate being pushed by Biden, there soon won't be any cars made in the United States of America, unless I'm elected president, in which case auto manufacturing will thrive like never before, MAGA 2024. Now, if you zoom out and listen to more of that clip, it is clear that he is indeed using that word within the context of a broader discussion about the automobile industry. But it's not as cut and dry as he wants you to believe. I'm actually not entirely sure what he's trying to say there, but let's listen.
And you're not going to be able to sell those cars. If I get elected, now if I don't get elected, it's going to be a bloodbath for the whole. That's going to be the least of it. It's going to be a bloodbath for the country. That'll be the least of it. but they're not going to sell those cars. They're building massive factories. A friend of mine.
So it is true that he was talking about the auto industry and seemingly said that it's going to be a bloodbath for the whole industry. But then, if you'll notice, he pivoted to a mini tangent where he added, that's going to be the least of it. It's going to be a bloodbath for the country. That'll be the least of it. So to me, it sounds like he's saying it's going to be a bloodbath for the auto industry, sure, but that'll be the least of our concerns if I don't win this election, because it won't just be a bloodbath for the auto industry. It'll be a bloodbath for this country. That's kind of how I interpreted it, but it's Trump, so it's not necessarily the most coherent thing in the world. Having said that, though, if we're extra charitable here and we assume that he was specifically talking about the auto industry, I don't think that people are wrong to be on edge when he makes a comment about that, especially considering the fact that, again, there was literally violence after he lost the last election. But at the same time, I don't think that it's helpful to harp on things that he says that are less clear, because it cheapens the things that he says that are unambiguously authoritarian or violent. For example, when he was president, he got caught on hot mic sharing his dictatorial ambitions with a Fox News host.
Are we close to seeing Mr. Kim here at the White House?
Could happen. I mean,
they talked about that yesterday.
I think it's something that could happen. Yeah. Hey, he's the head of a country, and I mean, he is the strong head. Mm-hmm. Don't let anyone think anything different. Right. He speaks and his people sit up at attention. I want my people to do the same.
That right there to me is one of the worst things that Trump has said, because people don't treat leaders that way unless they're brainwashed or afraid of them. But that's the kind of impact that a narcissist like Trump wants to have when he walks into the room. Now, at the time, he claimed that he was just kidding and being sarcastic, but after his emboldening of extremists and January 6th, and his Hitler quotes and Project 2025, it's obvious that he wasn't just being sarcastic. But regardless of how you interpret his bloodbath comments, it's not even the most controversial thing that he said over the last week, because at that same rally during an anti-immigrant screed, he said something way worse.
Young people, they're in jail for years, if you call them people. I don't know if you call them people. In some cases, they're not people, in my opinion, but I'm not allowed to say that because the radical left says that's a terrible thing to say. They say you have to vote against him because did you hear what he said about humanity? I've seen the humanity, and these are bad. These are animals, okay? And we have to stop it. We can't have another Lakin. We have so many people. We have so many people being hurt so badly and being killed. They're sending their prisoners to see us. They're sending, and they're bringing them right to the border, and they're dropping them off, and we're allowing them to come in. And these are tougher than anybody we've got in the country. These are hardened criminals, and we've got hundreds of thousands of them, and we're going to get them out fast. We're going to have the largest deportation effort in history. But with all of that, we've got ourselves a problem. When you have 15 million people, many of these people are people that should not be allowed into our country.
Yeah, so this is similar to the super predator rhetoric that we saw during the tough on crime era in the 1990s. He's trying to give himself plausible deniability by singling out criminal immigrants specifically, but make no mistake about it, the goal here is to insinuate that we should be suspicious of all immigrants since there's so many criminal immigrants being purposefully sent here. Now, this is in line with the comments that he made back in 2015 when he announced that he was running for president, where he generalized all Mexicans as criminals and rapists, but said, well, I assume some are good people. We know what he's trying to do here. He's trying to make broad generalizations to smear an entire group of people. But the fact remains that immigrants are statistically less likely to commit crime than American citizens. And when they're here, they pay taxes and they contribute to the economy, but they don't get to vote. They get exploited. So this generalization that he's using against immigrants is deeply racist. See, we don't assume that Americans are bad because some of them commit crimes and murder, right? So why don't we apply that same logic to immigrants? Well, it's because he wants you to think that they're all bad. He wants you to think the worst of immigrants to justify his largest deportation effort in history, which won't just target the criminals that he's supposedly talking about. Mind you, there's going to be innocent people who are deported as well if he actually goes through with this. Now, people who are here illegally oftentimes enter the country legally, but they overstay their visas. And because our immigration system is broken, purposefully so, mind you, they can't become citizens even if they've tried to do everything to become citizens or get visas. We have a broken immigration system, so through no fault of their own, they're here legally, they came here legally, built lives here, and then their visas expired. What do you expect them to do? What would you do in that situation? But he wants to demonize them and deport them because that's what he's running on. He's trying to make you afraid of all of them. And after previously saying that immigrants are poisoning the blood of our country, I think that overtly Hitlerian rhetoric is far worse than anything else that he said recently, especially knowing what we know now. For example, his former chief of staff, General John Kelly, described a conversation that he had with Trump where he was literally envious of Hitler. Quote, he said, well, but Hitler did some good things. I said, well, what? And he said, well, Hitler rebuilt the economy, but what did he do with that rebuilt economy? He turned it against his own people and against the world. And I said, sir, you can never say anything good about the guy. Nothing, Kelly recounted. I mean, Mussolini was a great guy in comparison. CNN continues, Trump's admiration for Hitler went further than the German leader's economic policies, according to Kelly. Trump also expressed admiration for Hitler's hold on senior Nazi officers. Trump lamented that Hitler, as Kelly recounted, maintained his senior staff's loyalty while Trump himself often did not. So, I mean, these things are starting to add up, right? He wants his generals and his administration officials to be as loyal to him as the Nazis were to Hitler. He wants people to respond to him in the same way that they respond to Kim Jong-un, right? They sit up and they give attention to him. He's also praised Viktor Orban, Hungary's fascist prime minister. And of course, he's praised Vladimir Putin as well, along with other dictators. And he hasn't praised them in a diplomatic sense, right? Where it's like, hey, we're peers. We work together as fellow world leaders to get things done. He talks about them in an envious way. He admires how they're able to command loyalty and consolidate power. And conspicuously, he's trying to do the same fucking thing now with Project 2025. Right? But at this point, nothing that Trump says is really shocking to me because it's obvious that he has dictatorial ambitions. And regardless if he actually intended to say that there's going to be a bloodbath if he loses or not, I mean, does anyone even expect there to be peace if he loses? Of course, there's going to be riots. Of course, he's going to cry rigged and foment even more outrage among his already unhinged base, and there's going to be a shitstorm. So at this point, what Trump says doesn't really matter, in my opinion, because it's clear that he is a threat to democracy regardless. And we don't really need additional sussy comments from him to come to this conclusion. I feel like it's pretty clear, right? Most people can see it. The question is whether or not Americans are going to take this threat seriously. And we're not going to know until November 5th. So we'll just have to wait and see.
Want more? Visit humanistreport.com for links to our full catalog of videos on YouTube, Means TV, and Facebook. You can also find audio versions of the show on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, iHeartRadio, and other major podcast platforms. And before you go, consider supporting the show on Patreon or through YouTube memberships. You get early access to most videos, invites to monthly live chats with Mike, and you'll be thanked by name at the start of the next episode. There are other ways to support the show. You can like, subscribe, turn on notifications, and share our content on social media. Thank you for watching.